big or even small personality changes. First, some employers are saying workers must get the COVID-19 vaccine, with federal data showing that most Americans have gotten at least one shot and that vaccines are now available to all adults. Companies are becoming more comfortable imposing vaccination requirements. A new survey from Arizona State University shows that 2/3 of employers say they'll offer workers incentives to get the shots. And if that doesn't work, 44% say they'll require vaccinations. What do you think? Call 800-642-1234. Would you get vaccinated if your company said you had to? What would it take for your employer to offer to get you to comply? Maybe you own a business. Are you considering requiring workers to get the shots? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Kurt Johnson is the vice president of the HS Group, which is a human resource management firm based in Green Bay and Appleton. You can also find them in Madison and Milwaukee, where they're called Career Momentum. Kurt, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Keely. Good to be here. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for talking with us about this. That Arizona State survey, it's a national snapshot. What are you hearing from companies in Wisconsin?
Yes, it's actually quite different. And I think the context really is, if you look at what the goal of most of the organizations in our communities, it's really to provide a safe workplace. And it's, you know, not only the right thing to do, the company's values and beliefs are certainly very much into the employees' well-being and safety. But it's also an important part of their employment brand, having a safe work environment. And right now, I hear this daily, Keely, that talent is such a challenge to find. And so really the all those pieces are in play, provide some context. And if you look at the pandemic in the phases, so we're talking probably March of last year, where we saw the visitor policy starting to change with the concern on who could be carrying the virus with them when they visited our sites. And then that moved into temperature checks and then ultimately really cases developing within our workplaces. And then contact tracing started to be more common. And I'll just make a comment on that. I've told people over the last year that probably one of the most safe places and healthy places to be is at work, because I hear from my human resource friends that as they do their contact tracing, just about absolutely all of the contact tracing found that the virus was contracted outside the workplace versus, you know, within the workplace. And then going back to the phases, you went through remote working situations, masking. And now we're at vaccines and returning to office type of situations. So it's the context and the phases, I think, are important to think about. And then as we look at the vaccines, what I've heard from my contacts in the state is really that the majority are not mandating. And I think I've only heard of one case so far it wasn't firsthand, it was secondhand. The firsthand comments that I've heard is, no, we're not mandating, but we are looking to educate and make sure the availability is there for the vaccine. So it's certainly different from what you just shared with me from a national perspective. It's not being mandated here locally.
And yet it is something that companies have to think about if, as you said, organizations are trying to create safe work environments, because vaccination is a key component to creating a barrier between people and this coronavirus.
Absolutely. And I think the organizations would certainly like to see the number of employees vaccinated at a high level. So they're gonna utilize education and availability to a great degree. They're also, you know, and there's some techniques that are being used. And I think what I'm hearing, there are more incentives being offered than initially. And by incentives, they are things such as a little bit extra PTO, some extra potential time off, not only to take the vaccine, but also to just, again, reward people for those self habits, those safety habits that getting the vaccine are going to follow up with. But there is still, I ask the question all the time. So, you know, how are you tracking that? And most organizations are, again, making it voluntary, but they are asking for some kind of proof. So it's either the vaccine card or information that was given to you at a vaccine site that shows that, you know, you were at such a facility getting the vaccine. So there are incentives starting to percolate. It's a new development, but we're seeing that start to happen, to your point, Keely.
Kurt Johnson is the vice president of the HS Group. That's a human resource management firm based in Green Bay. You're listening to Central Time, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have? How is your decision being received by your employees if you have told them it's important for them, if they're working on site, to be vaccinated for COVID-19? Or maybe you're trying to figure out whether you can do that. What's your workplace's policy toward COVID vaccinations? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Or again, you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. If employers, Kurt, understand that they wish they could, but they don't feel like they could take the step to mandate vaccinations, how much is it on the employer then to help people understand how a vaccine could benefit them and then how it could benefit their colleagues?
Absolutely. And I think that's what I've heard as a pretty consistent theme, Keely, is that they're really spending time educating and again, making the availability. When you think about the supply chain of the vaccine, initially, it was difficult to get. You know, we started in a smaller quantity, smaller sample size, but now it's fairly easy to get an appointment. And in some cases, you don't even need an appointment. I've heard employers starting to have more on-site clinics, which is fantastic. Again, ease of doing this is an important aspect here. I think that when I've asked the employers, you know, what kind of percentage are you looking at? And, you know, we've all probably read, just this morning, I read another article on what is herd immunity and, you know, what's the percentage that you're looking at? And I learn a lot from those articles. And I think my takeaway is, you know, we're never going to get to 100%. Is 80 or 90 good? Is that going to help? And what I'm seeing, at least in the literature, is the combination of heavy vaccinations and the fact that people have built immune immunization from the fact that they've actually had the virus. And so they've built that up. So the larger percentage of that combination is going to serve us well. And that's what the employers are looking at, because their employees, again, going back to all those different stages from the pandemic, that the employees have been faced with some, you know, pretty significant changes in how they work. So, you know, from the distance that they're next to one another in a manufacturing situation, with how much masking time do they have to wear a mask in the workplace? So the social distancing, the masking, you know, has been a real difference for them in the workplace. And so the employers are weighing that to say, okay, where do we get from a percentage basis on trying to change some of those work habits that we've had to implement because of the pandemic?
This reminds me a little bit kind of the flip side to this. Stick with me here. When we were talking earlier in the pandemic, we talked to people about unemployment, and they would say, you know, there's not really anything you can do if you feel like your work isn't safe and your employer wants you to come back in. You're kind of at a loss. This is employers kind of considering it the other way and saying, we're trying to increase the safety here. And it's, these moves to encourage or mandate the vaccine actually put other kinds of workers on the defense, the people who don't want the vaccine. Have employers changed their mindset a little bit in this pandemic, or are we maybe just looking at different industries?
That's a great point. I think the different sectors that you're going to be looking at is a big difference. And we're a heavy manufacturing state, Keely. So, and what I've been impressed with over the, you know, 12, 14 months is how many of our organizations are really essential. and have pivoted. If they weren't essential, they pivoted to be essential for the pandemic cause. And so, you know, those organizations, the continuum is quite a difference. So there are folks that actually have to be on site to produce a product. And then there are those service companies that professional services, for example, that, you know, still are essential, but their workers don't need to be at a facility, so they can be remote. So you've got a lot of factors involved, Keely, that are at play here. And again, as I mentioned earlier, daily I hear, you know, the war for talents back. There are really shortages of workers. And for example, I heard a story this morning in the restaurant industry. There are certain restaurants that are closing certain times of the day because they just don't have enough staff to really be fully staffed for the food delivery process. And so you've got a lot of variables, but that talent equation is an important one. So I think, you know, everybody's, the organization is really trying to target, yes, we want a safe workplace, and we want a employment situation that allows people to feel comfortable coming in and working, because the talent shortage is real.
We're looking at how companies are deciding whether to require workers to be vaccinated against COVID-19. Kurt Johnson is our guest. He's the vice president of the human resource management firm, the HS Group. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What has your employer said about vaccinations? Are they mandatory where you are? Would you get the shots if your company said you had to? What questions do you have? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. You're listening to Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina. We're talking about vaccination requirements in the workplace. A new survey from Arizona State University showed that more than half of the people who responded, the employers that responded, are considering requiring proof of vaccination from at least some workers. We're talking with Kurt Johnson. He's the vice president of the HS Group. That's a human resource management firm here in Wisconsin. And you can join in. Let us know how you are thinking about mandatory vaccinations in the workplace, if you think it's a good idea to help keep people safe, or you think it crosses a line. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Thomas in Kenosha wants to join the conversation. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, I just had a quick statement. So I'm totally for all vaccinations. I've been actually waiting for my girlfriend that's been stuck in Europe since March. She was supposed to fly here last June. So I totally think that everybody needs to start getting vaccinated to help ease the spread of everything. And I hope that topics like that come up more for international travel soon. But I also want to say that in the workforce, I feel like it would be kind of detrimental to some people because they really are against it. And so what would happen with them? Would they end up losing their jobs just because it's something that they don't agree with? Or how would you go about handling the people that really are just not interested in getting it?
Yeah, Thomas, thank you so much for that question. And Kurt, what about this idea that there could be penalties for workers if their employers say you have to get vaccinated and they don't want to?
Yes, Keely, it's a controversial subject. I mean, unfortunately, it's become political and there's very strong feelings. Prior to the pandemic, there were strong feelings about being vaccinated and such. And so I think from what I understand, and I'm not a labor or employment attorney, but what I hear from our friends at our attorneys are there's potential litigation opportunities here if you do deny employment for somebody that doesn't get vaccinated. So that's the challenge here. And I think that's why organizations have been very careful not to mandate, to be honest with you. So I would be surprised if we see too many organizations take a harder line. They're hopeful that they can get to the numbers they feel comfortable with through that education and availability situation.
And if businesses decide to require COVID tests or even strongly encourage their employees to get the vaccinations, how likely is it that we might see this with other things like the seasonal flu or other diseases? I mean, we see it in colleges, but we don't necessarily see that in general private business.
Yeah, Keely, I think probably the best example that we have over the years is the flu shot. And so when flu shots became more popular, more accepted, and to be honest, there was proof that it was effective, more and more organizations were taking a position that, yes, we're going to encourage, we're going to offer flu shot clinics. We're going to make it easy for folks to get the shot and to go forward with that. So that's the history. That's the one point of comparison, I think, that we have. And I hear many of the employers using that example as sort of a guide to, you know, how to handle things going forward. And I know there's differences, of course, with the vaccine, but that's at least one resource that they look back on. So.
If companies can legally require employees to get the vaccine, but there still could be litigation. We know that employers have to accommodate workers' religious beliefs or medical conditions that could prevent them from getting the shots. How far can employees take that? And, you know, how are businesses supposed to enforce that?
Great question. And again, anecdotally, what I'm hearing from my contacts, they are finding, especially those organizations that are now asking employees that maybe were able to work remotely if the employer is asking them to come back in the office. I have heard of a few cases where employees are now pushing back, saying they have some kind of medical condition or some kind of exemption from having to go back in the office. And what I understand is the employer's process around that is they're going to ask for doctor proof. They're going to ask the employee have the doctors provide some proof. And from what I understand from the stories I've heard, doctors are really reluctant to provide that proof right now. So that's current state.
Kurt Johnson is the vice president of the HS Group. That's a human resource management firm with locations across the state. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org as we talk about the potential for businesses to require employees to be vaccinated for COVID-19. I want to circle back to this point that you've made in a few different ways, Kurt, and that is that if there's a shortage of talent and companies are trying to create safe workspaces, is this one of the important factors that it would prevent them from mandatory vaccinations? Because if they're already looking for work, it would seem that if you require that, you might even shrink your pool of potential talent that could come into your business.
Those are all considerations, Keely, that organizations, I think, are really trying to think through right now. And this is, you know, I look back again at the last 12, 14 months with the pandemic. I mean, the organizations were changing and needing to change and flex daily at the start of this whole process. And now it's become a little bit more strategic, and you can become a little bit more planful on how do you go about during this stage, making those kind of decisions, just like you described. Now, let's hope that, you know, we don't have some variants causing issues like we are seeing in, you know, India and other parts of the world come back into the United States. And hopefully the vaccines will help defend us against those variants. But those are all topics that, you're raising very, very serious things that the employers are considering strategically now. And again, you've got all these different situations and criteria and scenarios happening. But it's going to be an interesting summer and continue the rest of the year, really, based on, you know, all of those factors playing out.
And it strikes me that these aren't decisions that just major companies who employ hundreds of people are deciding. I mean, these are decisions that small business owners have to make with even just a handful of employees. And that might look different depending on their size and the communities that they're in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I don't know if you've experienced this, but my wife and I certainly have over the last 12 months. Just restaurants, for example, when we did go out on occasion, we selected restaurants based on, you know, were their employees wearing masks? Did they clean regularly? Did they implement some environmental things like the heating and cooling system and some technology to try to lessen the potential of the virus being spread through the air? So you make a great point that even the small businesses are going to have to tackle these same issues. And it's going to be just a fascinating time. I say this all the time because I went through an HR major in college and then an MBA, and the last 12 to 14 months from an employment standpoint is going to be case studies that the next four or five generations are going to study. Mm-hmm. Wow. Because we've had it, you know, really concisely happen to us in the last year, a little over a year.
We've got about a minute left, and I just have to ask then, what advice would you give employers or workers as we figure out what to do about these vaccination policies?
Yes, and you know, the employers that I talk to, the HR community in general, really relies on the CDC guidance. So they look to the CDC as a real strong resource. And HR folks are trained to, you know, they need some guidance relative to the steps involved through the regulatory agencies in our government. So they put a lot of faith in what the CDC is recommending, and that's what they're bringing into their workplaces. So, you know, that's just, again, something that I think is really important, that where our regulatory agencies are leading us is going to make a huge impact on what our employer steps are going to be. So yeah, keep in tune with that. And also always check in with your employees, do some pulse surveys on what are their thoughts? What are their feelings? I know a number of organizations I talk to do these pulse surveys daily to just get a real understanding of where their employees' feelings are and where their mindset is on these issues, and making sure that they're addressing them. They may not have all the answers, but they're listening.
Kurt, thanks for talking about this with us.
You bet, Keely. It was my pleasure.
Kurt Johnson is the vice president of the HS Group. That's a human resource management firm with locations around the state, including Madison and Milwaukee, where it's called Career Momentum. We talked with him about employer-mandated COVID vaccinations for workers and how companies are trying to figure this all out. Coming up after the news, if you've ever wanted to change something about your personality, now might be the time. We talk about making personality changes post-pandemic. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Rob Ferret. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's The Morning Show. Tomorrow at 7 o'clock, the American Rescue Plan includes money to support child care centers. Child care centers have been on the front lines of the pandemic. Hear from two providers about being an essential service of the economy. Now, living through this pandemic has prompted some people to rethink the way they're living, whether that's what we choose to spend time on, when to say yes or no, who to spend time with. Our next guest explores the idea of changing yourself in this post-pandemic world, big and small changes, things like trying to be more extroverted by joining a club or planning a gathering, or if you're someone who's usually late, trying to be on time more often. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. In a year of forced and chosen transformation, do you plan to make some changes in your life? Has there been a time in your life when you felt like you made a difference and adjusted your personality to be more what you wanted? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Olga Kazan. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic. She wrote a book called Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. Her piece on changing ourselves is called You Can Be a Different Person After the Pandemic, and it appears in the New York Times. Olga, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
What about these really dire pandemic circumstances do you think has made this such an opportune time to think about who we are and what our personalities are like?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to vary for different people. The person in my story had a really traumatic event happen to her where her husband died. But some of the other people I talked to, it was just sort of spending more time alone, kind of getting self-reflective, not a whole lot of places to go, and thinking, what served me in the before times and what didn't serve me so much, and what can I do about any kind of gaps in my life that I felt like I've discovered.
And I think sometimes I think about my personality as kind of who I am, how I am naturally. But there are different components to a personality that you explain. Five different ones, four different ones, something like that.
Yeah, there's five traits that make up personality, which and each one has like a reverse. So it's extroversion and introversion, openness to experience and not openness, emotional stability and neuroticism, agreeableness and disagreeableness, and conscientiousness and not being conscientious, basically.
And you explain that it seems that some of those tenets are easier to change than other ones.
Yeah, so one that is like relatively easy to change from what I've kind of researched and from what other people have found is actually extroversion, where you can actually make concrete steps in order to become more extroverted simply by trying to spend more time around other people. Some kind of old-fashioned psychologists would have people like go to bars and talk to strangers, which might be kind of scary for some of us. And then after a while, you kind of start to feel like you actually are a more extroverted person than you maybe thought.
And you're saying it really is possible to change that part of yourself. What do you do then if you're saying, I really do want to be more extroverted? Because you can change it quickly, but not immediately. But you can help us.
So you can change it relatively quickly, but you have to actually behave in that way. You can't just think, oh, it always, I would love it to, be more on time, or I would love to be less neurotic. I'd love to be more open to new experiences. Like, you have to actually do those things. So if you feel like you want to be open to new experiences, you have to, the person that I interviewed signed up for like an alpaca a farm like visit or something, which is going to be a new experience for her. If you feel like you want to be more extroverted, like I said, you have to actually spend time around other people. In one study, actually putting more effort into homework led people to become more conscientious. So just behaving in a way that a conscientious person would actually leads you to become more conscientious.
And I liked that you explained that that kind of turned on its head this idea that conscientious students do their homework. It's like, well, if you do your homework, you're actually more conscientious. So it's more of a like a hand in hand sort of a thing rather than making assumptions about someone's personality and then how they act.
Yeah, I mean, really what this kind of this research is trying to show is that just because you are a certain way doesn't mean you're trapped being that way forever. Even something like therapy can reduce neuroticism, which is that tendency to be really worried and negative. Going to any kind of therapy for even just a month can actually decrease neuroticism by a lot. We actually, there's a lot of potential to change your personality traits if that's something that you want to do.
Olga Kazan is an author, and she says each of us can be a different person after the pandemic. Are there things about the way you were living pre-pandemic that you'd like to change? Call now at 800-642-1234. Join our conversation. Are you planning to reach out to more people or join more groups or stay connected to a family or be more positive? What are you looking to change? 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Olga, something you said there makes me want to ask this question. Help us understand how much of this we should be personally driven by, and how much of this could be, I guess, forced on us by society. I mean, we saw some rough tweets early on in the pandemic saying, well, if you emerge from this not looking like thinner or having written a great novel, then wow, what have you been doing with your time? And that's not what you're arguing. You're not saying we have to live up to society standards. You're saying, what do you want to be? You can make that happen. Is that right?
Yeah. So, to be clear, I am not saying people need to lose weight or be more productive. those are like not personality traits, right? That's like a physical transformation, or in the case of, you know, whatever, writing a novel, that's a creative, you know, process that takes a really long time. These are just ways to look at the world and be in the world that might be different than what you were doing before. So something like agreeableness, I think, is a really interesting one, because all that is just more empathy and concern for others. So maybe the pandemic has made you think about, oh, actually, you know, the people who are, you know, driving my food to me, or who are working in my grocery store, you know, they've been at greater risk this entire pandemic. And even just, you know, thinking about people in a more empathetic way and behaving in a more empathetic way toward other people, that's already a personality change, even though it, you know, you're not someone who's like now a, you know, poet laureate or whatever.
Sure. And to bring it back to your extroversion example, you might not want to be more extroverted, and that's okay. You can look at other pieces of your personality and try to improve them if that's what you want to do. Things like, you know, you also pointed to emotional stability there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So not everyone, a lot of the comments on the New York Times article were like, why do you want people to stop being introverted? And I was like, I am introverted. I probably am not going to be going to bars and talking to strangers. So it's like not something that I, you know, unless it's for a reporting assignment. So I probably am not going to work on that one. You know,
because you don't want to. Because it's not
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, it's not something I'm, you know, but something like neuroticism is something that, you know, I am kind of a worrier, and like, I, you know, have at times thought about how can I decrease my levels of neuroticism. So that's something that science has shown, that you can actually change through therapy.
Thank you for being willing to share that part of you. We're talking to Olga Kazan. She's a journalist and a writer. And we're talking about her recent piece in the New York Times called You Can Be a Different Person After the Pandemic. And we want to hear from you. There's a line for you at 800-642-1234. Have you tried to change your personality or your tendencies in the past? Maybe you're trying to be on time to things in the future rather than your usual lateness. Perhaps you don't feel like there's a whole lot of room for you to take this on right now, given the burdens of the pandemic. Share with us at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or send us an email. It's ideas@wpr.org. This conversation continues here on Central Time. Thanks for being with us on the Ideas Network. You can use the pandemic to reinvent yourself as a person. That's what our guest, writer Olga Kazan, says. We're talking about that concept here on Central Time. I'm Keely Boltina, and your calls are welcome on the Ideas Network. 800-642-1234 is the number. Maybe you have plans to come out of this pandemic and try something a little different, be a little bit different, because that's who you want to be. Now's the time to share it at 800-642-1234. Olga, you mentioned that we don't have to do this alone. If there's something we want to change, then we might be able to tackle it. You mentioned therapy. You also explain in your article that there's an opportunity for digital tools that could help people.
Yeah. So this researcher named Miriam Steiger actually developed this app, or I'm not sure if she developed it or, yeah, I guess she and a team of hers developed it, where basically just reminded people to kind of do these small tasks that would help change their personality, which so to give one example, again, using extroversion, would be like talking to a stranger when you go grocery shopping. You know, maybe you're waiting in line at the checkout and, you know, you kind of strike up a conversation. And then later the app is like, well, did you actually do that? Or did you, you know, chicken out? That actually like doing those behaviors actually did change those people's personalities. up to a 3-month kind of follow-up period. So that's how long they looked at whether those changes stuck. So that kind of shows you that even just these like little reminders of, you know, maybe go talk to this person, you know, try something new this weekend, can actually lead to personality change.
Another piece that you identified is that you can kind of give people the benefit of the doubt. That might be some piece of your personality you would want to change, that if you're easily frustrated when people say cancel plans, that you think about it differently. And that really resonates with me when I think about the challenges that we'll deal with getting back together and transitioning back to a more normal life, when people are going to have different levels of comfort. And sometimes you might need to say, no, I can't do that. How do you think about that when it comes to the post-pandemic mindset as opposed to 2 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really going to be a time of where we're all going to have to learn to be more agreeable, because people, you're right, are going to have different comfort levels. You know, I actually just tweeted about this, but so most of my friends are fully vaccinated and I'm not yet. I'm getting my second shot next week. So they can go hang out and go to bars and, you know, party. But I actually can't. So I always have to be the kind of the downer and be like, you know, sorry guys, that place is only inside and I can't go. So in this case, they have to be agreeable and understand that, you know, I can't be there. You know, but I have other friends who aren't comfortable even socializing outside until they're fully vaccinated. And I have to be the agreeable one in those cases. And I have to kind of be more understanding and realize that a lot of people are really scared about this virus and everything that's happened in the past year. And that, you know, we all have to be like kind of forgiving about pandemic brain and pandemic anxieties and pandemic trauma, because those are all real. And like, you know, we're kind of going to have to slowly ramp back up society and not do it all at once.
In some cases, we can just decide that now is a time we want to voluntarily change our personalities. And there are other times that things just happen to us in life where we're forced to be different because we can't go back to the person we were. You mentioned someone earlier in this. It's actually a person from Madison, Wisconsin, who was going through kind of a bit of both worlds. Can you tell us Catherine's story?
Yeah, so this woman, Catherine, that I interviewed was very interesting. Her husband died unexpectedly in January, and he was very young. He was 29. And that was like a total shock to her, obviously, and a huge trauma. But her husband was like one of those people who was always up to new things. He really liked like sailing and flying airplanes. And so she has decided to kind of honor his memory by kind of embracing this kind of lifestyle of trying new things. So this would be openness to experience of our five traits of personality. So she has created a bucket list of activities to try once it's, you know, totally safe. So she's going to be like, you know, dog sledding and glass blowing and things like that. You know, it's going to be difficult for her because she's sort of more of a quiet, reserved person who, you know, is really buried in her work. But this is going to require, you know, going new places, meeting new people, trying new things, being bad at things, you know, kind of adjusting her expectations all along the way. So, I don't know. I thought that was like a very powerful example of someone who's like, you know what, this is really my inspiration to try new things.
Right. And whether it's something that's as devastating as that loss or something that, you know, we didn't have a lot of death surrounding us in this pandemic. Everybody has lost out on something, from kids in school to, you know, adults in work, lots of people without work. So there are things about this pandemic that have made it kind of mandatory that we make a decision about who we're going to be next.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's also like an interesting reset period. Like, you know, I think a lot of people, because they've had so much more time to themselves, you know, like traditionally like silent meditation retreats are for, you know, breakthroughs. But I'm not saying we've all been silently meditating for the past year, but I think having that time of intense introspection is a good opportunity to think about, you know, what it is you really want and who it is you really want to be.
Sure. Yeah, because even people who've been going physically to work this entire time have been spending more time alone outside of work. So, yeah, we're all going through this for sure. Olga Kazan is an author, and she says each of us could be a different person after the pandemic. Doesn't have to be a complete personality change, but we could make some adjustments to be more who we want to be. Your call is still welcome at 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Facebook page, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's talk more about the popular goal for personality change being neuroticism. Help us understand what people are trying to accomplish there and how we can ratchet that part of ourselves down if that's what we want.
Yeah, so this is really one where it's like neuroticism is all about that anxiety and rumination, right? So if you're really anxious about things, or if you find yourself like stewing on things and being really negative, that's neuroticism. And it does tend to decline naturally with age, like as you get older, maybe you have less things to worry about. So this one review of studies found that any kind of therapy actually reduces neuroticism by half the amount that you might expect to see it naturally decline over that time of your life when neuroticism is declining. And the reason why they think this works is that it just like is beneficial to have like someone who's supportive and warm and comforting to be like, you know, yes, you're valued and you're like, you know, worthy and you don't have to worry so much, I guess, is the implicit message. But I don't know. I thought that was kind of interesting that like just any kind of therapy, really like getting any kind of mental health, you know, counseling can actually reduce your neuroticism.
What if we're sitting here thinking, well, that's all fine and good for the young people, but I've been living this way and this is who I've been for decades and I can't change that. What do you say to those people who are a little bit skeptical that we can change our personalities?
Yeah, I mean, I understand that skepticism, and I'm not saying that like tomorrow you're going to wake up and be Beyonce or you know, whoever, like it's not a you know, transplant situation.
Right.
But first of all, just because you've been doing something for a long time doesn't mean you can't do something different. And also like, you know, just because you have like a proclivity towards something doesn't mean you can't act outside, that, kind of proclivity, I guess. I, to use another personal example, I actually am very introverted, but for my job, I talk to dozens of strangers every week. You know, I call them up on the phone on purpose and ask them really, you know, sometimes intense, sometimes adversarial questions. So I wouldn't say that that's like the mark of an introvert. But you know, it's really important to me to do journalism, and it's really important to journalism to have people asking those questions. So, you know, for me, that's sort of the push that I need in order to get out there and talk to people. So, you know, even if it's something where you feel like it's been part of you your whole life and you'll never change, you never know what'll prompt you to act in a different way.
Hmm. And what do we know about whether when we make these personality tweaks or changes, whether they can stick long term?
Yeah. So, I think, the gap in the research here is that studies don't follow people like their entire life. Usually that's pretty rare for a study. So, the studies that I have seen show that it sticks for, about a few months and up to a year after like the thing that you did to change your personality, whether it's the therapy or the app or the exercise. You know, this is something where you might have to do multiple therapy sessions and multiple exercises and kind of like, you know, get back in that, you know, war room with yourself and think about, you know, is this something I still want to be pushing myself to do and how can I get there? You know, so yeah, it's definitely not just like a one shot easy trick.
it's all a journey. Olga, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me.
Olga Kazan is a staff writer at The Atlantic and author of the book Weird, The Power of Being an Outsider in an Insider World. She wrote a piece in the New York Times called You Can Be a Different Person After the Pandemic, read it for yourself. We've set up a link to the article at WPR.org/Central Time. And coming up tomorrow, we're having a conversation about mothers who've delivered babies during the COVID-19 crisis. Learn about their experiences with birth and recovery during the pandemic. Keeping ourselves entertained when we're still asked to limit the number of people we see can be a challenge. If you've made it through pandemic trends and you happen to have a treadmill, might we suggest a good old demolition derby?
It's going to be a quick race, folks. You'll lose a lot of the field. Look at this bumping and growing here. Holy smokes. That is a wipeout of epic proportions way to the back there. There's cars everywhere.
So this dad and his kids have hosted their own races with little matchbox cars and their trusty treadmill. In this video, they've lined up 100 tiny cars side by side in all their metal and plastic glory. When dad flips on the belt, the cars, they wobble and they crash and they careen off the track. And then some cars stick out and around and they increase the speed, you know, just to keep things interesting until finally physics deems one car the ultimate winner. These videos, they're definitely G-rated, but they still come with a bit of trash talk. The dad gets a dig in about how the Cornflakes Hot Wheels car is boring. And as one writer for Nerdist wrote, when you watch this, you will care who wins, and you will care way more than you should. We'll put up a link on Twitter. You can find it soon at Central Time WPR. This is Central Time.